That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
You don't belong with those people.
Oh, somebody else was in my shoes.
This is Between Pages with Mike and Dula. This week we're reading Behold the Dreamers by Imbolo and Bue. So this book is a compulsively readable debut novel about marriage, immigration, class, race, and the trapdoors in the American dream. The unforgettable story of a young Cameroonian couple making a new life in New York just as the Great Recession upends the economy. So it's about Jende Jonga, who is a Cameroonian immigrant living in Harlem. He's come to America, or to the United States, to provide a better life for himself, his wife Nenny, and their six-year-old son. He lands a job as a chauffeur for Clark Edwards, who's a senior executive at Lehman Brothers. So he gets lots of opportunities, his wife gets lots of opportunities, and they together can gain a foothold in America and imagine a brighter future. But the world of great power and privilege conceals troubling secrets, and soon Jende and Nenny notice cracks in their employers' facades. When the financial world is rocked by the collapse of Lehman Brothers, the Jongas are desperate to keep Jende's job, even as their marriage threatens to fall apart. So this was a good book. Sure, it hit home with you.
Being an immigrant.
Yeah, because you're an immigrant.
Yeah, so. It was a touchy at some points, and it's a strong book. In a moment, I wish I didn't read it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was reading, and I was like, damn, this is happening? You know, why is this happening? Right. You know, because I came as a international student, like Jende's wife was. He was worker, and I work a little bit too as like an OPT, which is, you know, international students can work or whatever.
Right.
You know, in that case, if I would get fired, I wouldn't be able to support for the next semester or something.
And Jende's wife is here doing what you're doing. She's studying.
Studying.
She's
exactly.
You know. Yeah, yeah. She's going to school.
Yeah.
And trying to imagine a better life for herself.
Yeah. And then Jende is working because he got some kind of working permits.
Exactly.
They don't get deep into that much, even though it's revolve around immigration a lot, but it's not like how he got those papers, if I remember correctly.
No, it doesn't talk about how he gets those papers.
Yeah,
it's talking about how he's trying to desperately hang on to those papers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And get like a green card or any other permit.
Yeah. So before we talk about the story, I want to talk about this cover, because this cover is just absolutely gorgeous. We have the cover, I guess it's the first release of it, because it just came out in September, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think we got it right when it came out. August.
2016.
August 23rd, wow. Yeah.
Random House is the same guys that publish, what is that, Croatian Girl? Girl at War, yeah.
They publish a lot of stuff.
Are they famous? I mean, you would
they're
know
big.
This.
Okay, yeah,
okay.
But we have the cover that has like a print with triangles in the background. It's got this really nice like handwritten looking font, and then it has New York City and like wood blocks almost. It's like little figurines of New York City. Just a really nice cover. I think it really. You know, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but I think a lot of what we've seen is we've been drawn by covers first.
Oh, absolutely.
And
you always do, no matter what. It's three different covers there.
Yeah.
And they all have
the
one have a tie on it and a car, which it's a significant to a story.
But it looks like a racing story or something.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't give you a story right away.
No.
Yeah. It But this one that we have, it gives you, it had something to do with New York and living somewhere.
Exactly. And so the story itself, I think it was really strong. I mean, for me, you, of course, you're an immigrant, so you understand kind of what Jenda and Nenny are going through. I was affected personally by the Great Recession when the market mm-hmm. collapsed. My parents, I was in college during the time, my parents lost their house. Mm-hmm. And when you have something like, you know, your home base ripped away from you when you're going through college, that's, for me, it was significant. Mm-hmm. It was about halfway through my college career, and my father lost his job, we lost the house.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I actually, at that point, my parents were helping pay for some of my college before. They were paying for a chunk of it. I was paying the rest. And at that point, they couldn't afford to help me out anymore. Mm-hmm. So I had to pay my own way at that point. So, you know, we'll talk more about what happened specifically in the story later. But it definitely had, you know, that reminded me of some of the things we were going through at that time as a family.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't experience what Jenda did.
Yeah.
Or what Clark Edwards did.
Yeah, same here. I didn't experience what they did, but I can relate it a little bit, being as an immigrant, being here as a school, trying to, I'm not going to say fight the system, but trying to fit in, you know, in some points. And when we go through it, I made some notes saying like, oh, this really reminds me of how it was happening or how this is this. Most of the stuff, how they were living, even though this was in Harlem and in the 90s and 80s, and Harlem wasn't bright, it wasn't a nice place, what I heard. And this book proves that. What I was trying to say is that it did hit home a lot in points how their mentality was. Mentality and how they're thriving to survive, you know, and what needs to be done. It's a good thing there were three of them. It makes easier. Like, I'm here with my wife. It's easier for me than, you know, maybe me being alone, you know. Yeah. But we're going to see later on in the book, maybe that would be even easier way.
No matter your circumstance, it's better when you're with people in that circumstance.
Yeah, no matter what.
If you're all alone, that'll drive you to crazy things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I got to say, for me personally, this book came at the right time. At the right time when, you know, elections and all.
Yeah.
And me as being an immigrant, it got me a worry a little bit, you know.
Right.
To be honest.
Yeah.
And then this, reading this, you know, it makes me feel better a little bit because, oh, somebody else was in my shoes.
Yeah.
But then again, this is a sad story. You know what I mean? It's not a happy story.
I thought it was fairly happy throughout, actually.
It was
hopeful.
Well, the hope was lost at some point. For him,
they had strong foundations.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting though that you saw it as a sad story. I see it as more of a hopeful story. I mean, parts of it were sad to me, but I was generally hopeful throughout.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was almost till the end. I saw the hope and I saw the good things, and then later on, I was not disappointed, but I was scared for them.
So spoiler alert right here, but if you're listening to us, you know you're going to get spoiled at this point. I thought at the end, despite all the crap that was happening, mm-hmm. I thought he was going to get his green card. Mbue was messing with your head so much that this isn't going to happen. There's so many hoops he has to jump through. This is a pain. This is, you know, that. And I thought at the end, that was going to be the happy ending.
Yeah.
That he finally gets his green card.
I can see why would you see that, but that then at the same time is, it wouldn't be that real. Because the only time,
But they never denied it to him.
They didn't say it. Exactly,
they said,
no.
You could keep fighting.
Yeah. If you ask me, he would get it. If he would stay, he would get it. Yeah. That's what I think.
And I thought he would. I thought he would keep fighting.
Yeah. But you see, that's why I was disappointed. That's why I say it was a sad story, because she was ready to fight his wife, which I admire her. Because at the beginning, she was not the strong one. So this is not only the immigration and all this, but it's only the woman power there too. Because she was, I'm going to say, soft at the beginning with all this immigration and everything. And he was the main guy there, you know, surviving, getting a big bucks. And then when he lost that job, then she was the strong one. Like, she went and tried to fight it.
Yeah, it was funny. I noticed that, too.
And at the end, she was like, let's stay here. Let's not hope. Let's wait. Let's wait. We can get it, you know.
No, but they end up going back to Cameroon at the end. Yeah. That's, you know, the ending, they go back to Cameroon. Yeah. But what you're talking about with Nenny being soft throughout, I still at the end, I thought she was stronger than she was at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But she was still very subservient to Genda's wishes and commands.
Yes.
You know, like when he, there's a point in the book where he beats her.
Yes.
And she goes, oh, that's, you know, my husband was just upset. He's stressed out. And I have to let that go.
Which is, if you ask me, it's such a strong, and I'm super against beating anybody.
Yeah.
But it's such a strongest inside of her, you know what I mean? Because she said, look what America did to him. Look at what struggle to keep our family together did to him, that he had to beat him. It's not him. It's not gender that I know.
He's gone off the deep end.
Yes, it's he can't, he doesn't have no power to change anything, so he had to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I understand that, because when my family was going through that thing, I saw my family change. I saw personalities that I never knew existed before. Yeah.
If the family doesn't go apart in that time, then you know the family is right.
You stay together.
You have to. Like, you know, my dad died too when I was 16.
Right.
Me and my mom, you know, everything changed. You know, I had to change. My mom had to change. Everything changed around us, you know.
Yeah.
People we didn't know, I mean, people we knew, our cousins or whatever, they changed too.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what then makes family stronger and stronger.
Right.
So did you like, you as a writer, did you like her writing?
Oh, her writing was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I loved her writing. I mean, she kept her chapters weren't super short, but she kept her chapters pretty short. I mean, they were usually they were usually about six to 10 pages.
Yeah.
And she always left on a cliffhanger, like a little bit, like the scene ended and it wrapped up, but there's always that little nugget of, well, what happened next?
So, you know, I was in school and I had my finals and all this.
Right.
And this is like 400 pages long book.
Yeah.
You know, almost. Yeah, it's 377 or something like this. 377,
382, final version.
Yeah. And I read them, even though during the finals. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not, because I was thinking about it. I was like, what is going to happen to Genda? I want to know.
And the writing was simple. And, you know, the author herself, Mbolo Mbue, I believe, she's a native of Limbe.
Yeah, right there.
She's from Cameroon. So, you know, being from Cameroon, I imagine English is her second language. Or a secondary language. Official language is English. Okay, never mind. But French is spoken.
Yeah.
So that I was going to originally say maybe French was their first language.
African cities have...
maybe she's writing in a simpler way, but you know, I think she just writes very simply and very beautifully, and it works.
And the conversations
are
just going to bring that up.
Yeah, did you notice that?
Yeah, the conversations were fantastic, and like the way she did the accents.
Oh,
I could hear them speaking. Oh, I could hear that the thick African accent.
Yeah,
and I loved it. I loved every minute. There was a rhythm there. Every time someone was speaking, there was some kind of rhythm.
I agree. And I, even though I'm sure it's a different, you know, different accent from people from Cameroon than people from South Africa or something, you know, but you could still hear it while she was writing.
Right.
And the conversations, she had that quick conversations, which were in quotes, and then she still described it a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. She was like, oh, Genda said, Genda, blah, blah, blah. I said, he said.
Right.
And then the whole half of the paragraph was still talking about.
Like summarizing.
Summarizing what he was still saying, but the conversation was not displayed to us.
Yeah.
Which was just, I liked it the way she did it.
So I want to talk a little bit about some more cultural things too.
Mm-hmm.
There's this point, it's 198 in my book. It might be around that area in your book, but...
What is the...
chapter 30. So this is when Nenny is talking about Mrs. Edwards' diet. Mm-hmm. She was talking about weight loss and calories and cholesterol and sugar-free this and fat-free that and stupid things no one in Limbe talked about. Mm-hmm. Now she was beginning to worry about nonsense. She was becoming a fearful wife. So I thought this was hilarious. She mm-hmm. says, you know, she bought all those magazines with skinny women on the cover and made sure she didn't put too much palm oil on the food. Mm-hmm. All this kind of stuff. And to me, that's hilarious because there's this reputation that Americans have around the world that they're fat mm-hmm. and they eat too much
yeah.
and they're overindulgent. Yeah. And here she is coming from Cameroon, which I imagine has a pretty like rich diet.
You know? Yeah, a lot of plantain. They ate plantain.
A lot of plantains. A lot of a lot of really heavy like home cooked kind of like comfort food. A lot of comfort food.
Yeah, probably like coconut fats. You know what
a
I mean?
Lot of fats,
some like that. Yeah.
And here she is complaining about how health conscious Americans are.
Yeah.
Although I think that's a class thing too. You know, like she's working for people in this situation that are much wealthier than the average American.
And speaking of, you know, the wealth American keeping, you know, rich people, not only American, but rich people keeping a standard or whatnot. When she goes to their place, she noticed that everything is white and gray.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's simple, it's minimalistic thing, you know, it makes stuff smaller but bigger at the same time.
Or it shows this cleanly, pure.
Which doesn't make sense, but it makes sense for the eye. It's pleasant for the eye, you know what I mean? Instead of super red or something, you know, or super dark, which would make room darker, you know.
Right. Make it feel small.
It's interesting how she's describing the poorest. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's like how she describes as a, you know, poor immigrant is seeing that.
Yeah.
Which is, it makes sense, you know.
Yeah, where, you know, her culture is going to have a lot of like dark colors, of patterns.
A lot of colorful probably too, you know.
Yeah, very bright colors, dark colors, patterns.
Which doesn't give that pureness.
Right.
You know, if you see a couch with a lot of flowers on it, it's just a couch.
It's kind of folksy.
Yeah.
So it makes you feel like you're
trapped
down in the bottom class somewhere.
Yeah. Which is, it's weird how our mind is fixed to that.
And yet, you know, the Edwards son, what was his name, Vince?
Vince, India guy.
Vince, he wanted to go meet the white tiger in India.
Okay, speaking of white tiger, didn't it remind you a little bit of white tiger as well, the whole thing?
The driving part,
driving part when he was acting like, sir, madam, you know, I would do anything for you or whatnot.
And then being a fly on the wall. Because the guy in the white tiger, he was able to listen in on conversations and get to know his owner, his master, more than anyone else.
It's funny that describing a poor population, it's compared to a chauffeur or a driver.
Right.
You know, in two books that we read. I'm amazed.
Because you're subservient to someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great role. For that, but at the same time, those people have some of the greatest trust in their drivers than any of the other people that are subservient to them.
Correct.
Because they're spending all their time with them.
Everything, yeah. And this shows a lot here too.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to talk about trust, Jenda gets in a certain situation where Clark begins, essentially, it's never said, plain out.
Well, it is.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But he starts cheating on his wife. Jenna's bringing him to this hotel and... With a prostitute.
Yeah.
And he's doing it, like, just to blow off some steam or whatever.
Yeah, it's not cheating. Like, he's not in love with some other girl.
Right.
Or some other woman.
And he loves
his
wife very much.
Yeah, which can show at the end.
I don't condone cheating or having a prostitute.
Yeah.
The story presents it as something that's... not so bad.
It's better, well, it's gonna sound weird, but it's better to have a prostitute than have a mistress.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna get. I'm just gonna do this because I have to do it because it's a business. I had to do it.
There's no emotion attached.
No emotions. But when you have a mistress, then it's a little bit more. You know, she cooks you a dinner. You get a wine. You spend the time with her.
He's cheating on his wife, and Jenda knows it because he's the driver. Mm-hmm. And then you have Mrs. Edwards come to Jenda and say, "I think something's going on with my husband." And Jenda's going, "Oh, no. Mm-hmm. No, Mr. Edwards would never do that to you." Because he's worried about losing his job. Mm-hmm. And...
Well, that was a bitchy move from her part, if you ask me.
Well, it was. But she's saying, "Here, take this book. Mm-hmm. Write down everywhere you take Mr. Mm-hmm. Edwards." Mm-hmm. Jenda has no clue what to do. And he's scared and he's worried.
Because he knew.
So he says to Mr. Edwards, he says, "Look.
What shall I do?
Yeah. Your wife did this. Mm-hmm. What should I do?" Mm-hmm.
And I think he did the right thing.
He says, it's so funny because he says, "Oh, write it down. Tell her everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal." And Jenda's driving along, like thinking, like, "Oh, even the hotel, even the Chelsea Hotel, I need to tell her about that." And Mr. Edwards goes, "Well, everything but the Chelsea Hotel."
Yeah, yeah. Leave out the Chelsea.
Leave that out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jenda's like, he's like, "Oh, finally, you know, that's
great."
But the thing about this, he has so much trust. Mm-hmm. Like, Clark Edwards can trust Jenda so much with everything, and he's always looking out for him the best. Mm. But Clark loses his job when Lehman Brothers falls apart, and Jenda's really worried that he's going to lose his job. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, though, because Clark says, "Oh, no, I'm keeping you on the payroll. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a new job." He finds a new job at Barclays, which is completely different from my experience with the recession, because... it's not that easy to get another job in a time like that. But for someone like that...
He was on a high position, so it's not like...
And he knew people.
Yeah, yeah.
My whole thought was, oh shit, Jenda's gonna lose his job here. He got fired later on because of his loyalty to the Edwards, to both Edwards. Because Mrs. Edwards found out he was cheating.
It was publicly.
And she knew...
It was publicly.
It was publicly. And she knew that Jenda was lying.
So then...
And she said, "Get rid of him."
Thanks for listening to Between Pages with Mike and Ula.